Welcome to Everything But The Tip, the podcast that bucks the trend of the mainstream golf content being churned out by the masses. Presented by the co-founders of Smart Golf and Fitness, we're on a mission to guide golfers towards genuine improvement. No swing tips, no shortcuts, we're anti-instant gratification. Join us as we navigate the complexities of the game, offering insights on how to truly excel in golf by embracing the challenges and breaking free from the usual quick fix mentality. And we're back with our third and final part of our follow-up series to our physical screen episode. Tonight we'll be going through some more swing characteristics, or false, depending on what you like to call them, and specifically highlighting the physical causes of those characteristics, and offering more insight on how we attack them, both from a physical standpoint and a drill perspective. Tommy, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for asking.
Beautiful. Well, let's go ahead, and if you'd like, go ahead and let's do a little review.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've came to the conclusion with some more research lately that there are 18, indeed 18, you know, swing characteristics. We were just talking before the set. I mean, there's probably way more. There's probably well over 20. Everything you do from a swing perspective is, you know, a characteristic of sorts. But again, these are some of the most common ones as identified by us here at Smart Golf and Fitness, as well as through, you know, the Titleist Performance Institute,
really
KSAT platform.
Really good starting point, yep, to hit the objective, which was allow experts from several different fields to speak a common language.
Yeah, and if you listen to the first couple of episodes, you've, you know, caught on to the theme that majority of these characteristics show up due to some physical limitations, but they can also show up just by not having a clear understanding of what you're trying to do in the golf swing. So, but as we go through the ones tonight, you'll find that, again, there are some very common themes in terms of what limitations happen in the body and how they manifest themselves and how they show up in your golf swing. But quick recap, 2 weeks ago, we went through, you know, basically four swing characteristics. We kind of identified them as postural in nature. You've got your S posture, where you've got, you know, a little bit too much arch in your lower back there. You've got your C posture, where you're, you know, pretty well-rounded there at the top. Then you have your general loss of posture. So anytime during your swing that you're not maintaining those original angles that you create when you set up to the golf ball. And then we had our flat shoulder plane. So last week we stepped up our game and we cruised through six of the swing characteristics. We kind of loosely categorize them as kind of backswing and transition. So we'll go into some more transition ones this evening, as well as some that occur on the downswing and even beyond impact. But last week we talked about the sway, moving excessively in a lateral nature in the backswing. We talked about the flying elbows. So one of the ones we'll talk about tonight is, you know, very, very similar to that, but it's on the downswing. But again, that elbow working away, pretty extensive conversation as to whether or not that's a good, bad, or other thing. But, you know, we just came to the agreement that, you know, you can play good golf with that flying elbow. And realistically, there's, you know, you can break down tour swings that, you know, you can see a lot of these characteristics there. So just because you have them doesn't mean you don't have the capability of playing decent golf. It's just, you
know, that's precisely why they like to call them swing characteristics, because in a majority, if not all of these, you can find players at the highest level with some of these swing characteristics. So that's where they like to be very careful in calling them flaws, because there's proof out there that you can have a lot of success with them. Now, I do think we'd all agree, if we were to, you know, write a book, or we had to write down what is probably the ideal way to move, most efficient way to move. Yes, it does depend on what your body's capable of. So I always say, if there was a perfect physical specimen, aka robot, with perfect dimensions from the shoulders, hips, you know, etc., there is an ideal way for them to move and an ideal way for that club to move in order to make timing easiest to repeat.
Sure, and that's what kind of creates our baseline for us. So we're working off of what those ideal ranges are, you know, if there was no limitations there, and then we build the swing around what we can achieve from a physical standpoint and what they bring to the table. But we talked about reverse spine. So again, basically your upper body's leaning towards the target versus away from it when you get when you take the club away and you get to the top of your backswing. Casting. So we talked a little bit about you and Tate fishing. Loves it. You guys catch any fish this weekend?
Oh, huge bass. You didn't see the picture I posted?
No, I didn't.
That's right, because he doesn't go on social media.
But starting from the top and getting those hands in the club going well ahead of the lower body. We've got the slide, so cousin to sway. excessive lateral motion with the lower body as you make your way down in the downswing. And then we had that forward lunge where that upper body comes excessive laterally. So that's kind of what we went through last week. Tonight we're going to get super aggressive and we're going to attempt to knock out the last eight. So we hope to get this done in three parts. I think we'll be able to, just because we've heard a lot about the physical limitations that lead to some of these characteristics. You're going to hear a lot of, you know, recurring themes tonight. So we'll cruise through them. We won't go into them as in depth as we have, because you'll hear those same things. But yeah, let's start talking about some those final faults that we've categorized tonight as, again, like I said before, transition and downswing characteristics.
Cool. Let's start with number one. First on the docket, it's called early extension. For those of you who have never heard of that, it's just a fancy way of saying, what is it, humping the shaft?
Humping shaft? Your butt comes off of that line that you typically see your instructor draw there.
No, in all seriousness, it is when your pelvis actually starts to move towards the ball too early in the golf swing. So if you think extension, flexion, if you're standing straight up, well, if you take a bow, you're moving into flexion. If you stand up and even go bend backwards, you're moving into extension. To be clear, in a really good golf swing, extension exists. Obviously, so does flexion. It starts right at address. But there is a point where you could be moving into that extension too soon. And that's where the pelvis, more or less, not only does it move towards the ball too early, it's essentially getting in the way of your arm path, your club path. And most of the time, I will say this, although early extension is a negative, okay, and it is an extra variable, most of the time, the early extension is a reaction to something else in the golf swing. And most people, most players that are doing it, although it's not wanted, it's actually necessary for them in order for them to honestly hit a good shot. But it's also another variable added to their timing equation, which makes it harder to repeat. So the most common reason people early extend, from just a mechanical standpoint, not a physical standpoint, is they're usually way over playing in transition, aka steep, and they use that stalling out, that standing up, that pelvis moving towards the target to help them late shallow the club. Really good athletes, they're pretty good at it. You know what? And they come in here and they wonder why some days they score so well and other days the volatility's through the roof. But that's the summary. Early extension, your pelvis moves towards the ball too early in the golf swing, usually as a reaction to being too steep.
Cool. So some of the physical causes there is limited hip internal rotation in that lead hip. So we're talking about that lead leg now. And again, internal rotation is just rotating that toe inwards. You have your inability to disassociate your trunk from your pelvis. So we talked about disassociation, being able to move your chest and upper body separate of your hips and being able to move your hips separate of your torso. So here we're talking specifically about your trunk's ability to rotate past the pelvis if we're able to post into that lead leg. And then, again, recurring theme, you know, Timmy brought it up last week, weak lat. Lateral hip and glutes. But I do want to point out that, like, of all the tests that we talk about for our physical screen, this one has the highest correlation with the overhead deep squat. So the overhead deep squat was one of the tests that we talked about. Basically looks at the whole function of the body from the feet all the way up, you know, through the shoulders and arms and things like that. But there is a very, very close to, you know, 100% correlation with people that can't perform a perfect overhead deep squat and having early extension in their golf swing. So I think that's the highlight here tonight, is that if you can't do an overhead deep squat, very likely you're going to see some early extension in your golf swing at some point. We did characterize this as kind of like downswing type of thing, but it can happen in the backswing, can it?
Yes, it can. So yeah, I mean, early extension, again, there is a point in the golf swing where it's supposed to happen. So you want to start to move into extension at a point right prior to impact that actually helps you stabilize the lower body, helps decel, which then transfers energy throughout the rest of the chain. Don't want to go too in detail with that, but yes, of course. And, you know, I was going to say this earlier, you know, a lot of these swing characteristics, you know, are intertwined with each other, you know, and we'll talk about that more in detail as we talk specifically about some of the other swing characteristics tonight. But yeah, if a guy has a flat shoulder plane, he probably stood up out of posture, right? There's a good chance. It's really hard to stay in flexion and have a flat shoulder plane. Oh, technical difficulties.
We're on a boat. This is not a boat.
But yes, you will see that in the backswing as well. And again, just to define that, that is the pelvis moving closer to the ball too early in the golf swing. I don't know if the statistic is still true today, but, you know, well over 70% of golfers at some point have this as one of their swing characteristics.
Cool. Did you already touch on some
mechanical Let's go a little bit deeper into mechanical implications before I get into drills. But, yes, I did talk about this a little. I'll just say this. You know, when the pelvis is moving forward, what are you not doing? Well, you're probably not rotating. If you're not rotating, you're not benefiting from that rotational power. If the pelvis is moving forward, you're probably not interacting with the ground, you know, both vertically, rotationally, and linearly. Yeah. So it's like, you know, once the pelvis starts moving towards the ball, you can immediately say there's a probably good chance you're a little bit of a power suck and not nearly as efficient as your motion. Now, I will say, yes, you take juniors, a lot of them early extended, it actually can be a power move for them. But just like with everything, there's an exception to every rule. But yeah, at the end of the day, the biggest issue you're going to see is that your body's getting in the way of your arm and club path. We'll get to drills here in a minute. So I'll just leave it at that for now until you finish, you know, what you'd like to do from a physical correction standpoint.
Yeah, so I mean, if you've got limited hip internal rotation in that lead leg, you know, the first thing we're gonna go after is trying to figure out, can we get some more internal rotation in that leg so that we can actually create some rotation of that pelvis and get posted into that lead side. We're gonna, again, continue to work on, you know, improving that separation, trunk on pelvis, and then we're gonna, you know, strengthen those hips and those glutes. So like I said before, a lot of recurring themes tonight. You're going to hear a lot of the same things, but you know, we talk about the same things with our clients over and over. If you haven't picked up right now, if you're not working on your hips, if you're not working on your core, if you're not working on separation, you're going to have a hard time developing a good long-term efficient golf swing. So
perfect. So from a drill standpoint, I alluded to this earlier, you need to determine why the player is early extending in the first place, not just from a physical standpoint, from a mechanical and a technical standpoint. So if a player is early extending, you better make sure that it isn't because they're steep in transition. Because if they're steep in transition and then you go ahead and start to prioritize their early extension, you're actually taking away a move that allows them to play to the level that they're currently at. So number one, when it comes to early extension, my number one rule is make sure they're not steep in transition. And if they are steep in transition, even if the early extension leads them to drop it under play and hit big blocks and hooks, I'm still going to make sure they're not steep in transition. And that might even lead to bigger hooks and pushes temporarily. And I'm going to say that's okay. Because as soon as we start working on maintaining posture, not early extending, we'll take that hook right out of your golf swing. But that's the thing that you just need to know. With early extension, if they are steep in transition, do not go after it. Now, as far as one of my favorite drills, after we've made sure that they're transitioning appropriately, I love a really simple one. I love to get them a little bit too close to the ball. I love to actually lift both heels in the air. I call this one squash the grapes. And in the backswing, I like the trail heel to hit the ground. And then in transition, I love to see that left heel hit the ground and then hit the ball. Now, there'll be some other direction that needs to go with it. But as far as early extension goes, I love that drill as my favorite after we have taught them how to appropriately transition.
Yeah, so don't go look up this drill and try and just do it out of the gate. Because there's so many different steps if you haven't picked up.
You need to, with all of this stuff, and you've seen there, we can be a little bit redundant with all of the physical causes where, you know, you'll see here shortly, one drill, you know, yes, the main cause might be because you lack internal hip rotation, but you could also have an upper body rotational issue, which then also makes the move as equally as challenging. But yes, all of this stuff ties in with each other. There's, as we all know, there's a domino effect to every lever we pull. There's a cause and effect to every decision we make. So that's where it's really critical that when you've determined what is the biggest issue and what you're going to attack first, understanding what the symptoms and the causes are from that.
Cool. So real excited about this new one we've been talking about a little bit just to make sure that we got everything right. But it's not new to us, so to speak. It's just been newly categorized. It's something that's been happening in people's golf swings, you know, all throughout your entire career. You've been addressing it. We've been looking at these things from a physical standpoint. But just, you know, now it's been brought to light. It's been categorized. It's been, you know, kind of highlighted. You want to go take a walk?
This is called hiking. Oh, so okay. When you say most we've been involved with it on a regular basis. Is that are we talking about when you hit the ball in the woods and then you go through a trek to look for it?
That could also be called hiking. Absolutely.
No, in all seriousness, hiking, that is defined as the trail hip. So on a right-handed golfer, the right hip actually going up in transition. In a good golf swing, we actually want to see that trail hip start to lower, in transition and throughout the downswing. So to define it, to keep it nice and simple, hiking is when the trail hip actually goes up in transition.
Gotcha. We like to characterize it as a cousin of early extension because it has to do with the pelvis.
Doesn't move
appropriately. Early extension, again, those hips are kind of moving towards the golf ball, so moving more on a little bit more of a horizontal plane, and the hips in hiking are moving more vertically. So either, high or staying too high, right?
Yep.
So, you guessed it, limited hip internal rotation, talking about the trail leg this time. So again, if you don't have internal rotation into that right leg, you either have to sway, move off the golf ball laterally like we talked about before, or that hip can kind of go up, that knee will straighten up, that hip will hike up, it'll go up, and that feels like more hip rotation there. So inability to dissociate your trunk from your pelvis. So again, can't move your shoulders without moving your hips. Everything kind of moves together. Weakness in the lateral hips and glutes. Those can be the cause of just about every swing characteristic we've highlighted so far and the ones we'll go through tonight. But the one thing I want to highlight that's a little bit different is a person's inability to posterior pelvic tilt. So a posterior pelvic tilt is basically just kind of tucking your butt underneath you or kind of pulling your belt buckle up towards your belly button. So if a person cannot do that, then that's going to be one of the primary causes that they might be see some hiking there in the backswing there, or in the transition.
No doubt. You already kind of hit on this, mechanical implications. You start to look at, again, as I've highlighted earlier, origins of why this particular swing characteristic might have developed in the first place. And it might even start at address. We talked about it in the first part of this series. It's S posture, anterior tilt. If you guys got their butt stuck out too far with a little bit too much arch in the back, as they start to move into transition, it makes it very, very challenging for them to load. So just like you said, they struggle with their inability to posterior tilt, well, that's going to create the conditions for a high trail hip. Now, if you're not loading correctly into your right side, well, as with a lot of this stuff, it's a power suck. It's another power suck. It's another interruption in the sequence to make your swing less inefficient. A lot of times I see this happening is guys, they're almost too quick to try to feel power in transition. So their right leg, actually, the right foot goes up in the air immediately. Also with a little bit of extension in the right leg, as you can imagine, if the heel goes up early, right leg extends, trail hip goes super high. So what you rob yourself of is in transition, you want to, once you load into your backswing, there's a period of where you kind of unweight yourself, where then you can use your lead leg to really, really push off. Well, for the guys that hike, they skip that part of unweighting. Not to say that you can't be successful with that, because there are guys on tour that hike. No, not many, but there are some. And it's not something you'd want someone to teach, but you'd want to teach someone. But anyway, so yeah, I think it really stems from guys really trying to generate power at the wrong time because they have a misunderstanding on how to do so. Oh, yep.
So again, we're going to increase that hip internal rotation, so improve the mobility of the hips. We're going to improve separation. We're going to strengthen those hips and glutes. Get after it if you haven't started already. But more importantly, we're going to improve their ability to posterior tilt that pelvis. So what that looks like is we might have them start lying on their back and create an arch in their back, so a space there, and then we'll have them close that space. So really try to get that lower back to flatten and push pressure into the floor there. So that's one of the basic ways. Once you can get decent at that and have pretty good control, we'll flip you over onto your hands and knees, and then we'll do like the hip part of like a cat camel or a cat cow of rotating that pelvis forward and back. So think about somebody having some dials on your hips and you're kind of turning them forwards and you're turning them back. Once we can get you doing that in those positions, then we'll start to work on some of it in standing, which again is an important part of generating power in the downswing there. So.
Love it. Kind of already discussed this, but mechanical implications. Yeah, it's ultimately going to be a little bit of a power suck in a way when your pelvis again starts to move towards the target. Okay, you're kind of getting in the way of your arm and club path. If you're in the way, well, then, you know, there's going to be a reaction because of that, and therefore making, you know, impact conditions a lot less efficient. A lot of these swing characteristics can result in that. Yeah, the other part of that is, you know, when I think mechanical implications, like chances are, I'm just actually going to jump to the drill side here real quick. You know, when I think of hiking, the very first area I like to go is I like to make sure they're loading properly in the backswing. You know, we talked about it earlier. If a guy does have a tendency to sway, kip that right, that trail hip out, you're creating the conditions to hike because your right hip is already too high, right? And when the right hip gets too high, you know, we talked about this earlier, you know, it's not too dissimilar to what it might feel like if you're reverse spining. Really, really challenging to sequence accordingly in the right order. So hips, torso, arm, club. Sorry, I'm losing my train of thought because we got a guy just taking a medicine ball upstairs in the gym. I think that's what it is.
He's
right?
Working on
just
his early extension. He's trying to make sure he doesn't early just extend.
We thought I don't know if you've listened. If people have noticed in past episodes, you can, if you listen closely, there's a guy just ripping shots or a driver in the background. I'm like, cool, well, we've taken care of that tonight in the hitting bay. But, you know, now we got a guy just slamming a ball against the floor upstairs.
It's med ball night.
Oh, my goodness. I'm about to run up there. But anyway, go ahead. Let's talk about some of your physical corrections with that.
I already did.
You already did?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So
told you. I lost my train of that.
Do you like Sylvester Stallone?
Oh, here we go.
What's your favorite Sylvester Stallone movie?
Not the movie you're trying to get me to say, but it's Rocky.
Right?
Well, who has a more favorite movie? And then there's Rambo.
Rambo's good.
Ooh, we got Rambo and Rocky, but I know what you're talking about. I don't know if this one first came out.
Are you a good arm wrestler?
Over the top.
I love this flick. It's great, but not a real good characteristic to have in your golf swing. But a lot of people have it. Like, I mean, you go to the golf course, you go to the range, what percentage do you think you're going to see some people swinging over the top? High percentage?
Yeah, I mean, about as highest percentage as you can probably get when it comes to swing characteristics. I mean, honestly, you've got non-golfers that have heard the phrase over the top. You know, they might not know exactly what that means, but over the top has been a, you know, common language in golf forever because, you know, when guys pick up a golf club for the first time, there is a much more likelihood for them to swing over the top than in any other manner. So let's talk about just what over the top is. Over the top just refers to where your club shaft, club head is relative to an arbitrary swing plane, right? So you start to look at 6 iron, let's call it, you know, don't want to get too technical here, but an average swing plane, let's call it right around 60 degree plane line, you know, of an angle relative to, you know, the ground, which is obviously 90. And then you've got driver, which is about 45, give or take. But basically, if you set up at a dress and you draw a line from the hosel of the club straight up through the shaft, through the back of the body, right? That's going to intersect your lower back, probably. You know, there's several different areas. You can draw a plane line. You can also draw another one straight up through the wrist and under the elbow. We actually call that an impact line. So if you actually draw one through the shaft and then one up through the wrist and the elbow, you kind of got a little cone there. You know, you could call that
a little space,
a little plane window.
A slot.
Right? Exactly. A slot. So when you hear over the top, that essentially means that in the downswing from down the line view, a club is way above that cone. In other words, you're positioning the club in a manner that would make it very, very easy to swing left of your target. Well, if you're swinging left of your target, what are you going to start to see? Well, you're probably going to start seeing pulls, big slices, another common, lingo in the golf industry, or, you know, you'll take the guys that are decent athletes with a lot of last second manipulation. Maybe they early extend, save it, cast the club, flip it, add 10 degrees to their, you know, 7 iron and turn it into a 9 iron, and they squared up, time it perfectly, and go, holy shit, where did that straight ball come from?
That was 4 swing characteristics in one swing.
And why don't I hit it further? Did I get it? Where you at?
You did. Oh, sorry. So like the over the top, like if I heard you correctly, to kind of give a little bit more simple visual, is it kind of like chopping wood? Kind of like just taking the club over, like you're chopping wood, like you're about to take it down and, you know, chop a log in half?
Guess I could have just simply said that and saved some breath.
Well, all right. I was just making sure because I thought I knew what you're saying there, but I just want to make sure that all the listeners knew. Over the top's kind of like chopping wood.
Perfect. Cool. Love it.
And just to simplify, just, you know, because you've heard me say all the other things multiple times already, biggest cause of that over the top is just an improper weight shift. Not being able to get the weight off of that trail leg into the lead leg, caused by an inability to disassociate or get the pelvis, the hips to go ahead, limited hip mobility either side there. And then again, that weak core and glutes are showing their ugly face there. But, you know, they start to generate power from the top with the upper body versus getting that lower body involved.
I think that's fair. I think, you know, one of the reasons over the top move is so prevalent is because there are so many reasons it happens, you know, and I don't want to go through the entire laundry list of all of those, but let's put it this way, man. We all want to be as close to plane as possible with a square club face and delivery position. And if you're not, if you're way outside of that, in this case, way above it, in order for you to really hit a straight shot, you need a lot of last second manipulation through the hitting zone, which is the last thing you want in golf. Yes, that's when you time it well, you hit a really good shot, and you wonder where the hell that came from. Really, you didn't really move much different. You just happened to time that really well. But yeah, if you're robbing yourself of yardage, you're robbing yourself of accuracy. It's just, it's not a position that you would prefer to play in. Now, depending on what someone comes in with from a physical screen standpoint, yeah, we might have to accept that to some degree they might have a little bit steeper swing plane. By the way, over the top, steep, those can technically kind of be interchangeable. But yeah, I mean, that's all I would really have to say with that is over the top, as I said, it's a great position to play golf from if you're hitting poles or slices, or, you know, you want a lot of last second manipulation.
Would it be fair to kind of categorize a lot of over the top can be seen in people that haven't played sports before, specifically rotational sports or implement sports? So, I mean, if you've played baseball and you're a decent hitter, or if you played some tennis and you understand how to hit, you know, cross-court forehands and inside-out forehands, you generally know how to kind of use that lower body and get it to go a little bit, you know, ahead of it, versus somebody that hasn't, you know, thrown a ball before, somebody who hasn't played any baseball or done anything like that. You mentioned an episode or two ago, or multiple times, that, you know, nobody picks up a 7-iron and tries to swing it as softly as possible. So, you know, inherently, you put something into your hands, you think that you need to use your hands and arms to get that thing to generate speed and power. Is that kind of a fair assumption there? Or?
I wish it were that simple. I can't tell you how many baseball players and tennis players that come in that are a mile over the top. So it's not quite that easy. You know, you got to think, like, when you're playing baseball, for the most part, that's a little bit higher than a golf ball would be. Right.
So, yeah, you know, you're trying to hit down on your head.
Yep. And the way they teach is they're still asking you to hit down on that ball, trying to chop it a little bit. Right.
Yeah.
And then you start to look at tennis again. Like, obviously, it's all over the place, but very, you know, when you're practicing that proper technique, the ball's not on the ground. Yeah. Right. It's around waist height. So I think when it comes to teaching those players and you start to give them concepts, I think that they can probably adapt and change a little bit easier. But no, I don't know. Here's what I'll say. From a sequencing standpoint, a weight shift standpoint, even in baseball, the weight shift is a little bit different. You see, oh, sure. I had a player today, came in for an assessment. He's a good baseball player. He was a mile over the top and a mile open. And you could tell he had power. He could swing at 112 miles per hour. But what he did to save it is he hung back, he spun out, flipped the shit out of the club, casted it earlier, and again, was the same player. Like, where does that one come from? Why does sometimes, he hit one today because I asked him, I go, how fast can you swing? I just want to see what your potential is. And he ripped one at 112, timed it perfectly, and hit one 306 yards. And, holy shit. He's like, because in the interview, he told me, like, I average about 250, 260, which he did.
You did an assessment today?
Yeah, I did an assessment today.
Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah.
Nice.
Should I give him a shout out? Dan Rosenblum, for anyone who's listening to the episode and knows him. He's going to be joining us as a short-term member here downtown, and then joining the crew up at Northbrook as soon as we open up.
Awesome. Well, exciting. Glad he could bring it in, and look forward to meeting him soon. So, again, physical corrections are not much different. We got to get you to disassociate. Again, if you can't move your hips without moving your torso, can't move your torso without moving your hips, going to have a hard time. Improve your hip mobility, strengthen the core and glutes, and then just teaching a person what a proper weight shift is. So there is that myth that baseball swings are bad for golf, and you just highlighted why in one capacity. And mostly, I mean, I like to just kind of simplify it even further and just say baseball players – keep that weight on that back foot and drive off of it, whereas golfers, we want them to get onto that lead leg and transfer that. So just teaching them how to get that weight off of that back foot, how to transfer that weight efficiently, could help clear up some of these items, or certainly, you know, be a starting point to get them moving down the right road.
No doubt.
Any drills you like for over the top?
Yes. Again, that conversation is way too long, but you know, just like, again, a theme with us here, you know, we're always going to start with a verbal command, and we like to use TrackMan here. Over the top, depending on what they're doing, last second through the hitting zone, typically could be a swing direction that is negative. So I might just ask a player quite simply, might not be a good result, but I just curious to see what he does. I might just ask him to swing to the right. You know, sometimes a player will surprise you, swing to the right, they actually start swinging straight, and they have the athleticism to match up the club face accordingly. Now, yes, 8 out of 10 times, yes, someone swing to the right. One, they either can't do it, or if they do, they keep their club face wide, wide open. So, again, just like with all this stuff, you got to get down to the root of the issue. How does their grip look? Do they got a weak grip? Sometimes a weak grip, opening that club face. You know, they use that over-the-top move as their mechanism to square it up. Not efficient, but when it comes down to it, yeah, you know, I'm going to start from the beginning, just like I do with any player. I'm going to make sure there's no grip issues, no address issues. I'm going to make sure they get loaded into their trail side accordingly in their backswing. And then, yeah, I like to teach players how to use the wrists accordingly. And there are some surefire ways that make it really, really hard to swing over the top. So, you know, a good straightforward one, though, is put some stuff in the way. Take a pool noodle, put a shaft in it, stick it in the ground, and say, hey, miss the pool noodle. That's a good place to start.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the next couple of characteristics, we're going to kind of group together, one in the effort of time, but more importantly, just because they relate to each other directly. So one specifically causes the other one. You've given a couple examples the last couple of comments you made, and you've rattled off 4 or 5 characteristics when describing one swing, but these two definitely correlate together. Like I said, one causes the other, but you want to walk us through what the hangback and its one of its root cause, the reverse pivot?
Yes, hang back and reverse pivot. I'll just define them very straightforward.
Excuse me.
Hang back is exactly what it is. You're staying back. So as we should all be aware of now, that there is a desired transfer of weight into the lead side in the downswing. So a hang back, you kind of chill back on your trail side. Several reasons for why that might be the case, but a hang back just means that there is not a proper weight shift. And, you know, something that will that definitely has some mechanical implications we'll talk about here shortly. Reverse pivot, you know, in a traditional golf swing, you know, let's just, you know, not talk too specific to wedge play or driver play. But, yeah, you want to see someone shift pressure and weight into their trail side on the backswing. And you want them to do the opposite of that in the downswing. Shift pressure and weight into the lead side. Reverse pivot's the exact opposite. So on your backswing, you tend to stay on your lead side in your backswing, and then on the backswing or downswing, you tend to shift your weight to your trail side. A lot of the times we start to see this does start a little bit from their conceptual understanding. It creates this false feel of allowing someone to feel they can get the ball in the air. So you think, oh, golf, well, a ball goes high, I should try to hit up on that ball. Well, if I stay back on my right side, you know, that might increase my likelihood of doing so. We all know now that that actually makes it a lot more challenging.
Gotcha. So like this reverse pivot hang back, that's where you're not going to be able to see somebody's, like, the bottom of their shoe or their cleats on the finish, right? That foot's flat on the floor, basically, flat on the ground, basically.
It doesn't have to be, but yes, that could definitely, if they're doing that, they're 100% hanging back. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Basically, you know, physical causes. You can pick any of the ones that we talked about previous, but I like to just kind of simplify it in the fact that, you know, any problem that limits the ability for that person to post on that lead leg. So again, internal rotation, we go back to the ankles. We haven't talked about those in a little bit, but any limitation there from an ankle mobility standpoint and a hip mobility standpoint, and then instability in the core under that lead leg. So you could talk about just strengthen that leg in addition to the mobility of the ankle and the hip joint. But anything that does not allow them to post on that lead leg, more than likely, that person's not going to get on that lead side. And this one kind of speaks to me, you know, directly, because cam deformity, arthritis in the hip. Now that I got my new hip, I'm able to get onto that left side, you know, very comfortably and very well. It's just more so myself teaching myself and, you know, convincing it that, hey, there's not going to be pain. There's no more injury there that I can, you know, let loose and rip it into that left side.
No doubt. There's a later swing characteristic that resonates a little bit more with me with the, you know, the cam deformity. mechanical implications. I'm just going to keep this one really simple. There's several. But, like, today was a perfect example in today's assessment. So there's something in the golf swing called low point. Every golf swing has a arc, and there is a bottom of that arc. And there is a place where the bottom of that arc should be relative to the ball, depending on what club you're swinging. So if you look at just an iron, for example, you know, we look at divots. Tell me, where are divots taken? Are they taken before the ball or after you hit the ball?
Ideally after the golf ball.
It's a new concept for you, but I think you're successfully doing that a bunch these days.
I like to trench behind my ball sometimes.
But, yeah, so you start to look at, you know, low point. If it's supposed to be in front of the ball, if the bottom of the arc is supposed to be in front of the ball, you're supposed to hit ball, then take a divot. Well, if you're not shifting to the lead side, that becomes really, really challenging. Today was no exception. This guy didn't have a single low point after the ball. You know, don't get me wrong. You can still, you know, there's still ways to kind of cheat the track, man.
Then to win, baby.
But, yeah, you can tell immediately looking at this player, like, you know, what do they say? The superintendent loves you, you know, because you're never tearing up his golf course. But so that would be the biggest thing. Irons are designed in a very specific manner in order for them to be used in the most efficient, effective way. And that's while, you know, to hit the ball, then the ground. Driver, you know, you start to look at the hang back and the reverse pivot. Again, you're going to rob yourself of power, but considering the driver as a low point before the ball because we want to hit up on it, this guy was also no exception. He was a better, more efficient driver of the golf ball. But that would be my number one, is that when you don't have good weight transfer, you're going to have low point issues. And if you have low point issues, you're going to have consistency issues, not only from a contact standpoint, from a distance control standpoint.
Cool. So you guessed it. We're going to get after that ankle mobility. We're going to get after that hip mobility. We're going to strengthen your hips, your glutes, your core, and ultimately just teach what that proper weight shift feels like. So again, using some drills. You know, we use med balls a lot. You hear that dude up there. Like, thankfully, he took a little bit of a break now, so hopefully you can hear us better. But we'll start with the feet together, and we'll step with that front leg and then toss that ball against the target there just to, you know, get them onto that lead side. Again, we like to use tasks. Hey, throw this there. We'll see what they do. If we need to coach them up with a couple of coaching points, we will. But I want to see what they do naturally first as an athlete. A lot of times when we just give them a task to accomplish, they do it, and we don't have to, you know, overcomplicate it or get their brain in the way, because basically the brain does make things a lot more challenging if you give too much information or if they're thinking too much about it. So,
sure. Love it. And another beautiful part of our programming is just like you can have them step and throw a ball into a wall with no consequences. You know, a cool drill out there is called the step change drill. You know, an exaggerated version of that we'd all be familiar with is a Happy Gilmore golf swing. You actually don't have to have a running start in order to execute that move. It's more or less like a baseball swing, but you're required to finish on your left side. So I do love that. Again, just like with a lot of things, I like to make sure we're going down to the root issue. But I'm going to teach them how to load up accordingly into the trail side first. And then I might just give them a simple direction of saying, hey, can you finish on your – can you show me the bottom of your right shoe at finish? Because as you alluded to earlier, really, really tough to show someone the bottom of their right shoe if you're not transferring to the left. But again, I would consider this particular – I don't want to say it's complicated – but there's a lot of details to it. There's drills. I'll try to throw some verbal commands to see how you respond to them. But no, I'm going to teach you when your pressure is supposed to be on your trail side, when your pressure should start to move to your left side, and then so on throughout the golf swing. And, you know, sometimes that's just doing some slow motion swings, some segmented swings, using the live video. If you have a pressure plate or a body track, you can help to use that feedback as
feedback.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, just to wrap that up, good drill is a step change drill.
Got it. Yeah. And that's, you know, if you haven't picked up on it, a lot of moving parts, a lot of different looks to look at, things to look at. If you watch yourself on video and you see yourself hanging back, hey, give me some drills for hang back. You can go online, you can pick up some stuff, but at the same rate, you still don't know why you're doing it. You don't know what areas need to improve to make those drills effective or if they're even appropriate.
Well, again, when you start to get later throughout the golf swing and we start to look at like impact issues, you know, transition issues, downswing issues, a lot of those issues are usually a result of something else, not just from a physical standpoint, from a technical standpoint. So, you know, again, if someone's steep in the golf swing and they hang back, that could be a little bit of an extra variable or slash mechanism that allows them to plane it out and hit a golf shot, you know? So again, it's, you hit it perfectly. If you're going, if you know you're called a victim or guilty, or again, I'm challenging how I'm saying it, because again, TBI calls them characteristics. But if you know you have one of these swing flaws, you better be certain why you're doing it before you go immediately after it, because it could very well be a movement or a swing characteristic that you currently need or benefit from.
Sure. You, we're in the home stretch here. We got our last three. Are you a dessert before dinner kind of guy?
Rarely.
Okay. Well, my favorite dessert is ice cream, so I think we should talk about scooping.
Oh, boy. Okay. Scooping. Mentioned it earlier, but to try to create a visual of it, scooping is referenced to your wrist angles in club shaft, often associated with casting. But kind of a visual is at the moment of impact, you know, a lot of players, we talk about shaft lean, right? I forget what the averages are now, but, you know, depending on the technology you're using, you're going to see someone's shaft about 7 to 13 degrees further forward at impact than it was at address. So each club has a particular loft. If I were to, you know, say I have, call it, you know, 30 degrees aloft, well, if I tilt the shaft forward 7 degrees, well, now I've got 23 degrees aloft. So you're technically de-lofting the club. Good players de-loft the club. Scooping is the exact opposite. You're actually adding loft to the club, right? So at impact, you would not see your hands leading the club head. You would see the club head making impact with the ball prior to your hands getting there. You're going to, well, I guess I won't go into the mechanical implications, but that's what scooping is. Do you have another cool analogy that could have made that way easier? That
no, you just mentioned earlier with that hang back is, you know, people see the ball fly high, and if they have a misconception of how that ball goes high, that's, this is another method that they use to try and get that ball in the air. They try to lift it up in the air by getting those that club to go ahead of the hands.
Agreed. But most cases, just like a lot of the swing flaws, it comes from a swing plane that's probably too steep in transition or over the top.
We could have saved ourselves a couple of episodes if we just went and just said that the whole time.
Basically.
But, yeah, I mean, I find this interesting, especially these last couple, because we, you know, some of the swing flaws that we've talked about, we heard about the physical limitations, the causes of that, and they made sense. But because this is like an arm and like a hand-related one, people think it has something to do with like the arms and the hands, which it does, but more so, it has to do with, again, that lower body not being very, very involved. So a lack or limited contribution of that lower body in the downswing that causes that last-minute manipulation that this person needs to make in order to just hit the golf ball. Their brain knows that if they miss the golf ball, that's way more detrimental than just hitting a crummy shot when you're out there with your playing partner. So it's going to do whatever it does. But again, lack of lower body power, limited hip mobility, lack of core strength, we beat that. To a pulp, and then, but you know, wrist limitations or injury are big causes of this, and you want to take those really, really seriously. I mean, wrist injuries are like career enders, so you want to take those seriously. We also look at those wrist range of motions, that ulnar radial deviation, extension and flexion, because they are important for releasing the golf club. So we want to we pay special attention to that if we see scooping in the golf swing.
So. Very rarely, I don't even know if I can say ever, but there's always an exception to everything. It's golf. Do I see someone swinging on plane in delivery with a square face and they scoop? So in other words, scooping is always a result, typically, not always, most of the time, a result of something else. You stated that, hey, you know, if someone's not rotating well, they might scoop, right? If they're not shifting well, they might scoop. That's true too. But I would challenge you and everyone else as to like, all right, well, let's first work back to why they might not be rotating well. Let's first challenge why they might not be shifting to the left well. And we've already discussed it tonight.
Limited hip interrotation, lack of hip strength.
It might be. But, and that might have been the origin of it. But typically, again, going back to the swing issue we've talked about earlier, is if someone is steep and then they are a good athlete, Well, if they're steep, again, we already know you're swinging towards the left. If you're over the top, we already know the swing direction wants to go left. Well, after we've already created that position, well, what can we do to correct it? Well, we can stand up and early extend. Well, if we stand up and early extend, we have to cast. Or we start casting to save it, and then we stand up and early extend, so we create room for the cast, right? Well, and then the cast, well, if we need to square it up, well, the flip can actually be a squaring up the club face mechanism, even though you're adding loft to it. So scooping's no exception, and if not the one of the biggest issues where you better know why you're doing it in the first place, because although scooping is a negative, it's also the reason why you can hit really, really good golf shots. So as you're seeing, there's a little bit of a theme here. Being steep in transition is a really, really big issue in the golf swing. Calling it over the top. Because it causes, as we've discussed tonight, so many other swing characteristics.
So we've got listeners that, don't want to take the ever important step in coming to see us at Smart Golf and getting assessed to figure out some of these root causes. And, they don't want to put the blood, sweat, and tears in the gym. Can they just work on a cast early release scoop pattern and try to time that baby up and just, work that in?
I think in a lot of cases, you may not like this, the answer is yes. But you risk. There's a risk. If you don't truly 100% know the true origin of it, if it was physical, because I've been guilty of that in the past, working on something that I knew the technical side of it, but I didn't address the physical side of it. And it didn't hurt the person, but there was definitely some limitations into how far I thought we could go and should have been with the time that we had put into it. But yeah, as you know, it's no different than the question. I know you're laughing over there with the question, but I think it's a good one for our listeners. But it's no difference than saying, hey, can someone improve the mechanics simply by only doing the fitness side, right? And in most cases, the answer is actually no. Like, we'll create the conditions in order for you to now train. And yeah, if you actually get someone stronger and they were extremely weak and they're more stable and they have more balance, yeah, you'd think that they'd be better at golf because of that. So sure, there are exceptions. But yes, if that were the case, if we couldn't do that, we'd have to put guys in the fitness program for a really long time until we start addressing their technique, which is obviously not what we do.
Right. I think it's a funny picture to watch some guy like literally trying to cast early extended and scoop at the driving range and trying to get really good at that.
Oh, is it? Maybe I misinterpreted your question. Is that what you asked? Do you sometimes just teach people to do that?
No, I was just like, if somebody just didn't want to put the time and effort in, they're like, oh, I'm just going to learn how to cast early extend and scoop here really, really good. I'm going to get good at those three things.
Well, you laugh, but going to the range and just beating balls, that's what majority of people are doing
right. Without
recognizing it. And that's where they'll go to the range. They'll beat a ton of balls, leave the range feeling like they just got better because by the end of it, their timing was really, really good. They're like, all right, I'm getting better. But the truth is that style without addressing the root issues, you've limited your ceiling of potential so low, it's not even funny.
Nice. So to get rid of the scooping, we're going to get that lower body more involved in the downswing. We're going to improve the power production of that lower body. We're going to improve that hip mobility. That's going to help all of these characteristics that we've talked about so far, including the scooping. We're going to improve that core strength. And then, again, like I said, real important to see if there's any wrist issues. We want to make sure we address those to the best of our ability to make sure that we don't cut their career short by overlooking something there in the wrists. Any drills or you want to move on to dinner? Because I'm getting hungry.
There's a ton of drills. I like to educate and teach a player the how to actually use their wrists accordingly. Through the hit zone, but again, it's so individual based on why they are scooping. That's a tough one to answer, just depending on the individual. But sometimes you might put the little attachment to the end of the club. I call it the punisher, to where you teach them how to basically hit a little chip shot without the extended shaft hitting them in the ribs. That's a good starting point. I think there's limitations with that. One, it interferes with an orthodox setup. And then it can also disconnect your arms a little bit more through the hitting zone than I'd prefer. But no, I mean, really, I just really like to educate people how to use the hands accordingly. So I might have them do left-hand swings only, right-hand swings only. I'll teach them a lot about ulnar deviation. Sometimes I'll give them just a really simple drill where I call it, let's get your heel of the club in the air and face close through the hitting zone. So in order to get the heel up and face close, you have to enter ulnar deviation. You have to be a little bit in deflection or bowing in the lead wrist. It's the only way you're going to do it. So you can get their wrist to be re-educated without getting too technical and allow them to be externally focused. Now, there are ways to do that incorrectly. If you're sitting there going heel up, face close, and that club's traveling over the plane, well, you know, we're defeating the purpose. So I like to teach them a heel up, face closed, underplane type drill. Let's call it that.
Cool. Are you a bone-in guy or a boneless guy?
Oh, wow. I was like, where are we going with this?
We're going to the second-to-last swing characters we're going to talk about. It's making me hangry.
Yeah, it has been a long day. I didn't eat my second factor. Okay, go ahead. What is it?
Tommy, like wingy.
Go ahead, say it.
Chicken wing.
Here we go.
It's just kind of like that flying elbow in the backswing, but this happens on the downswing.
Yeah, sure does. Chicken wing is an excessive bending of the lead arm, typically beginning at impact, but more prevalent post-impact as we start to release the club. Not to say that your left arm or lead arm needs to be completely extended, but yeah, through the hitting zone, you can see that the left arm has an excessive amount of bend through the hitting zone and the release.
Cool. As one would suspect, lack of external rotation in that lead arm, so left arm for the right-handed golfer, right arm for the left-handed golfer, and poor scapular stability, again, strength around your shoulder blade, are definitely areas that we want to look at. Those are physical causes of the chicken wing. But like you alluded to before, it's often a product of something that's not happening earlier. And again, we've heard this a couple times tonight, but it's lack of power production, speed production, lack of involvement of that lower body that's causing an inefficient transfer of energy from that lower body to the upper body. So power and strength deficits in that lower body are kind of the primary cause, and we want to make sure that the shoulder has adequate external rotation and good scapular stability to be able to handle what it's supposed to do once we figure out what that, you know, cause is for that chicken wing.
Perfect. Yeah, mechanical implications are also, it is a inefficient transfer of energy through arms, hands, into the club head. Typically, you know, you start to look at why the chicken wing exists. Well, going back to some earlier swing flaws, if a guy is casting, scooping through the hitting zone, they get a little bit too much cupping in the lead wrist, aka extension. Well, sometimes people chicken wing because it's a safety mechanism. To go through the hitting zone with a left arm that's dead straight and cupping in the lead wrist, well, the guys that do successfully do that, they are typically complaining of somewhat of golfer's elbow, tennis elbow, whatever you want to call it. So some of it's just a reaction to being too cupped in the lead wrist. Again, I come to find out if a guy is steep, okay, over the top, they actually need to stall out the rotation, so they'll stop rotating. They'll move into early extension. They'll cast the club. They'll scoop. And here's the deal. If you don't have the ability to rotate through the hitting zone, well, I challenge you, listeners, if you can picture this. I've done it on a previous episode. If you put both your hands together and extend both your arms, and I say, okay, you've got to keep your arms extended and point to the left of you, but you're not allowed to rotate, well, you can't do it. So if you put your left hands on the left side of your body without rotation, well, a good way to do it is to bend your left arm, lead arm, aka create a very specific image that are known as a chicken wing. So in order to keep your arms extended, you have to have the ability to rotate your upper body, aka torso. But remember, there's a reason why the torso might not have rotated, and that was because you were stalling out your rotations due to previous swing characteristics that forced you to do so.
Cool. So we're going to make sure that lead shoulder has adequate external rotation. Again, as if you were taking an oath. And looking at the shoulder stability. So making sure that the shoulder blade is stable. Again, the shoulder joint is mobile. Shoulder blade is stable. Allows that rotation to take place and not put too much added stress and strain across the rotator cuff. But more importantly, we're going to make sure once that shoulder and that shoulder is moving well and the shoulder blade is stable, now we're going to improve that lower body strength, power production, and then learn how to transfer that energy from the lower body to the upper body. So it doesn't matter how strong we are down below. They have to work together like we talked about before. Stability, mobility model. We've got to have stability in one area, mobility in the other, and that will allow us to be able to transfer and create massive amounts of rotational speed, power, and transfer it efficiently from one segment to the next to create bombs.
Beautiful. Mechanical implications, kind of already discussed this. But yeah, I mean, from a TrackMan standpoint, you're going to have low point inconsistency issues. You're going to have dynamic loft issues through the hitting zone. Again, you might lose club head speed, and you might have a swing direction that's really moving left, aka hitting poles and slices. We'll keep it simple as that.
Last one.
Unless
you want to hit a drill.
Drill again. Like to know the origin, but I'll give some stuff, some pretty straight forward drills here. I might, stick the towel under the lead arm. I might, just give them a drill where they're required to do waist high swings with extended arms. I'll give them some checkpoints that we want to hit on the track, man, but I'm going to start at a speed which they can successfully finish in their golf swing with some extended arms. And the cool thing is, if they do have an energy transfer or a weight transfer issue, well, you're working all that in conjunction too. So I will just say, as an overall goal here at Smart Golf, when we do introduce drills, we're trying to check as many boxes as we can and attack as many swing characteristics as possible within that particular exercise.
Cool. Thank you to everybody who has listened to the first couple episodes and gone through all 17 and soon to be 18 swing characteristics. Let's close it out with the late buckle.
So, as I said earlier, talking about the cam deformity, which I don't know if our listeners would know what that is, because I didn't know what it is until I realized I had to get a hip replacement.
D. Rose wants to be part of the crew. He's got one. He just found that out.
Oh, man.
He's been having some left hip issues and finally got a little x-ray. And doctor said, hey, you got a cam. So some of those, a lot of times those are congenital, I mean, you're born with it, but a lot of times those can kind of develop over time with wear and tear and just the way that the body's kind of structured and, your activities of daily living, things like that.
And that's one thing I actually forgot to mention earlier about hiking. Some of it can be your, leg length and how, or just your overall posture. Like for me, my right leg is a little longer than my left, right? So I actually weigh more on my right side, which I won't unpack that right now because you'd think the opposite. But shifts your left and your upper body balances out, and then you end up weighing more on your right side. But I get what looks to be a little bit of a hip hike, but it's not. That's just my anatomy. So anyway, cam deformity, the femoral head is supposed to be a nice, smooth, round ball. It's supposed to fit into your socket very, very smoothly and perfectly symmetrical, if that's the right word. But it doesn't. There's some sort of
it's kind of
deformity.
Like it's kind of like a bone spur. Perfectly round. So,
but anyway, I used to be guilty of what's called the late buckle, where basically, if we define what that is, you hit the ball in a more common swing characteristic that we'd see in a good player. That lead leg starts to move into extension. That's what we call posting. So it's straightening of the left leg, and it actually stays straight all the way to finish. Late buckle is you might actually post. You might actually apply decent ground force reaction into the lead side, but after you hit it, the left knee kind of boom, it actually buckled. It actually has a quite a bit of bend to it post impact.
Cool. Causes of the late buckle, besides a cam deformity, ankle and hip mobility, glute and core weakness, and some lower back dysfunction. So, recurring theme that we'll summarize here momentarily, but late buckle, that knee bends at the end. It's kind of like reduces some force, right? It kind of cushions things a little bit versus kind of violently moving into the outside.
I feel like you're late buckling in your explanations on physical causes right now.
Kind of am. All I'm thinking about is scoops of ice cream and chicken wings.
mechanical implications. This one is interesting because there's a lot of really good players that have the late buckle. A lot of times when I see the late buckle, I actually do see more. This is one of those swing characteristics that I do see it being more of a physical than a technical reason it happens.
For sure.
You start to see as guys get older, they lose their range of motion. you know, that late little buckle can sometimes offer a little bit more actual hip rotation, not technically internally if you were to measure it. But you start to see, you know, you look at the guys on the senior tour, some of the best players in the world, you know, having a little bit of late knee buckle is not very common. Their hamstrings aren't nearly as flexible. They don't have as much dorsiflexion. So calf flexibility, ankle mobility, everything's just a little bit moving, just a little bit less, right? The range of motion in almost every part of their body is probably a little bit more limited than they were at a younger age. The good news is you can still have an effective energy transfer. You can still technically post. Posting just might look a little bit different. I would love to see the lead leg moving, starting to straighten, but it doesn't have to actually be straight. And then if it buckles after that, sure. You know, some of the physical implications, some of it's psychological. You know it's coming. It's a little bit of an extra variable. It can interfere with your low point control. It can interfere with your timing a little bit and efficient energy transfer because, you know, the late buckle being so abrupt that it is, the fact that it's the exact same every single time, well, that it isn't. And that's what makes it, you know, an interruption in the pattern.
Yeah. So once again, to close it out, we're going to improve that ankle and hip mobility, recurring theme. Improve that glute and core strength. Get after if you haven't already. We're going to improve your lower body dysfunction or your low back dysfunction, whatever you might have going on there. And then we're going to actually teach them what it feels like to post in that lead leg. So again, if they can do so safely, we will teach them and get them into positions, asking them tasks that will inherently get them posted into that lead leg. So,
love it. Drills, assuming that we're, you know, we've done... made some good decisions up to this point and making sure the late buckle is not a reaction to something else or something needed. Yeah, I like to start at slow speeds and I like to challenge them, you know, see at, you know, find that starting point, the speed in which they can actually hit a ball, post efficiently, finish to the lead side, you know, transfer the energy to the outside of the left heel, and then I'll have them hold it there for 5 seconds. And I'll simply ask, you feel any pain? How hard is this? How physically demanding is this? And then what I'll try to do is I'll just try to maximize that lead leg posting and minimize that late buckling as much as I can from individual to individual, just simply by introducing to them how to transfer weight into the lead side and then, you know, use that ground to post into to the left leg. Again, it's, you don't have to get fancy with the drills. You know, sometimes it's just literally teaching them the pattern. So a lot of what I'm doing, I don't even know if I'd classify as drills. I really like to teach the genuine movement pattern. So with their exercises, it's very similar to what you're doing in the gym. You know, of course, TPI, they'd probably say, hey, why don't you just do left leg only? You know, that's a good one. It's a good starting point. But for me, I'd rather challenge my players, make it, you know, as challenging as possible to get their brain to work through the process as much as possible, because I find the return on their time investment ends up being much, much more powerful.
Cool. That was quite the marathon we went through the last couple of episodes.
Yeah, usually I have the opportunity to listen to episodes before we go to the next. I haven't listened to any of these yet, so I don't know if they suck. Boring, interesting. I know that I felt like you just had to keep repeating yourself, so I'm not sure how that will go to our listeners. But at the very least, the message they should take is that, you know, depending on what swing characteristic might resonate with you, there are some staples and some foundational pieces that, from a functional standpoint, physical standpoint, that you need to be in a certain place for in order to, you know, effectively remove or develop the preferred pattern.
Yeah, and prior to that, you actually have to go through an assessment. So you have to figure out what they are first. Like we talked about the mobility stability model. What areas of the body need to work well, and are they working well? What areas do you need to have strength, stability, and do you have that? And then from there, once you figure it out, now you can start to connect the dots as to why you've been doing certain things in your golf swing. Maybe you've been trying to change them. Maybe you've been to some instruction before. Maybe you've had some mild levels of success to eliminate some of those things. Maybe you weren't even down the right ROAD to figure out, you know, how to correct those things. But it starts with the assessment. Yes, the recurring themes. If you can work on getting your ankles, your hips, your thoracic spine more mobile, again, core strength is not a buzzword, is a buzzword. isn't a buzzword. It's very, very important for making sure that you can give yourself the best possible chance to eliminate some of these characteristics from your golf swing if you desire to, and if you want to put a little bit of work in, and if that's the path you need to go down, that you and your coach want to get you down. But we talk about it all the time. If we can help people be a little bit more athletic, we give them the capability of being better golfers. It doesn't guarantee it. So get it done. Get an assessment done. Figure out those areas that you need to improve, and let's get on that road to improvement.
Well, yeah, and the last thing I would just say is, you've learned anything, is that there are symptoms, and then there are causes, and there are a lot of players out there, especially the ones looking up on social media and YouTube. They know that they have a particular swing issue, but it's a symptom of something else. So they want to attack it, but they don't know whether or not that actually should exist currently in their golf swing to complement something else shitty they're doing.
Sure.
Right? So from a tip standpoint, if we I like to offer one, is like, make sure you're 100% on your origin of that swing issue, and you know the cause, and you know that it's not just a symptom of something else.
Cool.
I look forward to talking about a future episode here on our swing philosophy, our mechanical philosophy, why we make swing changes. I think we've talked, you know, around it a little bit in these last 3 to 4 episodes. But for all of those that, you know, did stay with us for these last 3 to 4 episodes, we're really excited to release an episode on our swing change philosophy. And I would definitely strongly urge for you to listen to that one.
Cool. Yippus.
Cheers.
A big thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Everything But the Tip podcast. Stay connected with us on all social media platforms by following @SmartGolfFitness. For additional episodes, updates, and exclusive content, check out our website at smartgolffitness.com. Don't forget to show some love, like, share, and subscribe to ensure you never miss out on the latest insights and engaging discussions. Your support means the world to us. Until next time, keep swinging and stay fit.